my agents were in the room and we were about ready to sign a contract, and Bruce Allen called and he interrupted the meeting. He said, "You tell Jim, do not sign anything. We have an offer he cannot refuse." And that was to play for any team in the USFL I wanted. And they offered me and guaranteed me more money. So I decided to go there, but unfortunately, that leg folded, and I became a Buffalo Bill, and probably one of the greatest decisions I ever made.
Welcome to the next episode of What's Next with Eric Wood. Our next guest led the Buffalo Bills to four consecutive Super Bowls and was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2002. I am thrilled to have a Buffalo legend on the show today, and that's my good friend Jim Kelly. Jim was one of only three players to have his number retired by the Bills, and when I joined the organization in 2009, we instantly hit it off. We originally connected over the fact that we were both passionate about pouring into sick or disabled children and their families. Due to my brother Evan passing at the age of 11 after having severe cerebral palsy, and his son Hunter passed at the age of 8 after he was born with Crab disease. Jim was a crucial part of the Bills' success in the early 90s. He was selected to the Pro Bowl 5 times in his career and earned first-team All-Pro honors in 1991. He spent a total of 11 years in Buffalo, and even after his playing days, he has continued to epitomize what it means to be a fighter and a world-class human being. Today on the show, Jim and I talk about some highlights from his career, his transition out of pro football, his battle with cancer, and much more. When I started this podcast, Jim was one of the first people that I thought of who would be a perfect guest. Jim is a role model on and off the field for how hard he fights and for the compassion he has for others. His foundation has raised an incredible amount of money for families in Western New York with sick children, and he has supported my foundation as well as so many others over the years. I absolutely love his saying, "Make a difference today for someone who is fighting for their tomorrow." Remember to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast after you listen. If you enjoy our content, this is the best way to help. Now, enjoy the show.
Jim, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me, bud.
Yeah, this is one I've been waiting to do for so long. I wanted to do this in person. I wanted to do it last year during the season. It didn't quite work out. And then this COVID stuff happens. It would have been perfect to do this from a golf cart or something at your golf tournament. But here we are. It's October of 2020, and we're still in COVID time, so we'll do it virtually.
Sounds good to me. I miss everybody. I mean, that golf term, everybody came back, and it's always fun catching up, but that's part of our life now, so hopefully it will get better.
Yeah, no doubt. Why don't you start off by telling the listeners about where you grew up and the sports you played growing up?
Well, I grew up in a little small town of East Brady, Pennsylvania. I grew up in a family of six boys and had a mother and father. My dad worked steel mills, was raised in an orphanage, and he raised his boys all to play sports. And pretty much all of us wanted to be good enough to take care of the two people we love, and that was my mom and my dad, which was really cool. I played football, basketball, baseball, and golf. And the reason I played golf was just to get out of school. if you're on a golf team or certain times of year, you can get out. And we didn't have baseball in high school, but I played all the way up till 16 years old. So I had to find something else. And I knew that I was half decent. I wasn't great, but I was good enough to make the team. And I was number three man. And yeah, of course, I loved football. I loved all sports, just being with the guys and having fun.
Well, it all adds up now that you're on the golf team in high school after we played in that deal in California together, and you're saying you're shooting in the low 80s, high 70s, and this is post-battle with cancer. No time to get out on the golf course, and you go out there and fire low score. So it's all adding up now, but you're a good enough high school football player to go to a lot of different schools and college to play quarterback. What ultimately led you to the University of Miami?
Well, where I'm from, you're either a Pitt fan or a Penn State fan. Growing up in Pennsylvania, and I've always been a Joe Paterno guy, and I wanted to play quarterback there. I went to his football camp my junior, senior year in high school to show him that I could play. And unfortunately, long story short, he wound up getting two All-State quarterbacks from Pennsylvania, And he called me and said, Jim, we've already got the two guys we'd like, but we'll give you a full ride to play the linebacker. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And the funny thing about this whole story is my oldest brother, Pat, played, he was drafted by the Baltimore Colts to play the linebacker the years of, you know, Roman Gabriel and Mike Curtis, the linebacker. So I always looked up to him for answers to some questions I would ever have. So I called him, I said, Pat, Coach Paterno just called and he said that they already have the quarterbacks they want, but they want me as a linebacker. And he played the linebacker. And I said, what do you think I should do? He said, brother, I have a few words of advice for you. He said, before you board those chartered flights, he said, the stewardesses never want to know who the linebackers are. They always want to know which one's the quarterback. I go, bro, that's all I need to hear. Talk to you later, click. I turned out to be a quarterback.
Oh, man, that's hilarious. Where did those two All-State quarterbacks that went to Penn State, where'd they end up? Do you know?
Yeah, one ended up being the backup, really never played, and the other one turned out to be a receiver. So, and the funny thing about this whole story is my first start at the University of Miami, my redshirt freshman year, Coach Schnellenberger was my coach, and we traveled to Penn State. And again, to fast forward through the story, right before the game, he taps me on my shoulder. I'm just finishing my breakfast. He said, son, come with me. I need to talk to you. And I'm thinking, oh no, what did I do wrong? And I started thinking, okay, I saw my mom and dad last night. We had dinner, didn't do anything last night. Last week, no, I didn't do anything last week. Why is he pulling me aside? And he looks at me and said, son, I decided today you're starting. Get ready. I go, what? He goes, you're starting. Get yourself ready. First thing I did, I walked towards the bathroom. He walked towards with me. And I go, excuse me, coach. So I went to the bathroom and I threw up. Wow. And I came out and he goes, son, what's wrong with you? I said, don't worry, coach. I did that before every game. I said, I'm going to be ready. To okay, let's go get him. And we wind up beating him. We upset Penn State that day, and my first four starts as a freshman quarterback were against Penn State, Alabama, Notre Dame, and Florida. Welcome to big-time NCAA football.
Wow. That is an incredible story. I'll always have a soft spot in my heart for Howard Schnellenberger. I trained through college. I had one scholarship offer, and I got to train in college at the Howard Schnellenberger football complex at the University of Louisville. Got to meet him a number of times through the university, and then every year we get to catch up at your golf tournament. And, man, what a remarkable guy. His recruiting stories are absolutely phenomenal. If I can get him on the podcast one day, man, that'd be an absolute joy.
You know, the thing about Coach right now, he's not doing well, so he definitely needs our prayers there.
Yeah, you got it, and I'll make sure that's done. And all those listening, please send up your prayers as well. And there's no doubt about your allegiance to Buffalo now, but at one time you chose to play in the USFL for the Houston Gamblers over playing in Buffalo at that time. What went into that decision, and what ultimately brought you to Buffalo?
Well, I knew Buffalo needed a lot. And it would not have happened unless Bruce Allen wind up calling the Buffalo Bills office, and the secretary, the receptionist, let him his call go through because I was in into the office where at the time who was the head coach back then? I always this is so long ago. It was right before Coach Levy was my coach. But whatever. My agents were in the room, and we were about ready to sign the contract, and Bruce Allen called, and he interrupted the meeting. He said, you tell Jim, do not sign anything. We have an offer he cannot refuse. And that was to play for any team in the USFL I wanted, and they offered me and guaranteed more money. So I decided to go there because back then, they were getting all the top players. I mean, it was Reggie White, Doug Flutie, Calvin Bryant, some really, really top players. And I think they could wind up getting three Heisman Trophy winners in a row. But unfortunately, that leg folded, and I became a Buffalo Bill, and probably one of the greatest decisions I ever made.
No doubt about it. As we're speaking here today, you're in your office in your house in Buffalo, New York. You're a lifer. You've done so much for the community up there. And a lot of that's from a very special run that you guys had while you were with the Buffalo Bills, and you make four consecutive Super Bowls. You have a Hall of Fame career, get to play with so many Hall of Famers yourself, coached by a Hall of Famer. When we could spend hours on this podcast talking about that time and all the good times. We'd have to maybe make it at least PG-13 to talk about the parties and everything that went with it. It just made it just the most remarkable time. One of my favorite things to do is sit around at your golf tournament and just sit with you guys and just listen to the stories and the camaraderie. But when you look back at it, what stands out to you most about that run?
Probably the togetherness that we had, knowing that, you know, each and every year our goal was, of course, to number one, win the AFC East. And then we all had those dreams and goals of getting to the Super Bowl and winning. And after we went the first time, I remember we won 51-3 and just the fun that we had doing it. And going into that Super Bowl 25, that was during the Gulf War. I mean, there were snipers, you know, on top of the stadium. The helicopters were flying over. The year Whitney Houston sang probably the greatest national anthem ever sung by anybody.
Yep.
And to dream, like I was a little boy dreaming in my backyard, I was going to lead my team down the field with 2 minutes to go in the Super Bowl and win it. And that's exactly what happened to me. 2 minutes to go in the Super Bowl, I lead my team down. And unfortunately, as we all know, our kick sailed wide right and we lost. But the togetherness that we had as a unit pulled together, especially when, you know, you don't win the second one, now you're going to third one, how all that negativity you hear outside your locker room from when you travel, oh no, not the Buffalo Bills again. But you know what? We never gave up. And to this day, as you well know, Eric, you just brought it up about how much we get together, how much we talk about the old times. And there's guys like you that don't say a word. You just sit back and listen, have a smile on your face, and you say, wow. And that was wow era. I loved it. I had so much fun. I met my wife at my house. So this is something, as you can see, the smile on my face right now, because it definitely brings back a lot of great memories.
No doubt. And I love hearing about those times and the resiliency it takes to even get off the mat after one Super Bowl loss. To get back to the Super Bowl three more times is absolutely phenomenal. The amount of teams that don't make the playoffs following a Super Bowl loss is remarkable. And the fact that you guys not only got off the mat, but went back to Super Bowl after Super Bowl is absolutely remarkable. And as you look at this current Buffalo Bills team, do you think that they're primed for, I'm not going to say a four Super Bowl in a row run, because that's never happened before. It may never happen again. But do you see a lot of success in this team's future that I see?
Oh, there's no doubt. I would love to see them be able to, number one, get back and have a playoff game here right at our stadium. As you well know, Eric, as far as watching that, how exciting the Bills Mafia is and how crazy of fans we do have. But just to have a game here, have some team that's not used to this weather come here in January and have a little fun with it. But Josh Allen is having a heck of a year. You know, you got all the receivers. Reminds me back when we got James Loft in 1989, how our offense changed, went to no huddle. I had Andre Reed, James Loft, and Don Beebe, Hall of Famer behind me, Thurman Thomas. So I just hope that they stay healthy. And that, as you well know, for any team, you have to have your key players healthy. We've got to keep Josh Allen healthy. He's a big target, and he's a heck of an athlete, but sometimes worries me when he runs so much. But you know what? That's part of the game, and I just hope he stays healthy.
I know, and he's so competitive that'll probably always be part of his game, because he's going to do anything he can to will his team down the field. I'd be remiss if I didn't bring him up. His son is a huge supporter of the podcast, Drew. There's always a special relationship between a center and a quarterback. That's probably why we clicked since day one. Talk about your relationship with your center at the time, Ken Hall.
Well, number one, he was my best friend. And number two, God bless him, because he's in heaven now looking down on us all. He passed away a few years back, and he's definitely truly missed by everyone, because he was our leader on offense. He had a quarterback usually is, which I was to a certain point, but Kent was one of our big leaders, one of the best competitors. As a matter of fact, when our team folded in the USFL, when our team got folded and we joined the New Jersey Generals, he was the center. So I took every snap under center from Ken Hall from the time that we both signed in 1986 for the Buffalo Bills. We both retired in 1996 at the same time. So the center that I was with every snap was Ken Holm, not only one of the greatest competitors, but I know that if we would have won one or two of those Super Bowls, we probably would be talking about Ken Holm being in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. That's how good he was.
Absolutely. And one of my regrets from my career is we got to play in two Hall of Fame games, and the second one, it hit me during the game that I should have switched my number to 67 for that game to make a push, because it's tough when you've passed to get the notoriety, because you're not attending the event Super Bowl weekend every year and kind of getting your face out there. That's probably my biggest regret from a on-field, something I wish I would have done throughout my career. When you look back at a Hall of Fame career, is there anything you regret or wish you would have done differently?
No, not really. I mean, yeah, probably in Super Bowl 25, I probably should have ran the ball a little bit more than we did, but we never had the football. I mean, I think the time of possession was 42 minutes. They had it. We only had 18 minutes. I remember going into halftime, they held it for the last 9 minutes of the first half, and we kicked off to the second half, and then third quarter, they'd wind up having for another 8-9 minutes. So I wasn't even on the field for over almost an hour and a half. So I wish that I would have probably ran the football a little bit more than throw it, but unfortunately that didn't happen. But you know what? That's probably, if that's the only thing I have to worry about, then that's pretty good.
For sure. And I love the detail that you remember back to a specific time and place where you maybe would have done something differently. That's insane. There was never a time in my career that I finished a game that I sat out for an hour and a half, and I never got to play in a Super Bowl with that extra long halftime either. But that's insane to not be on the field for an hour and a half when you consider you warm up, you play, and then an hour and a half, then hit the field again. That's absolutely insane to me. And when you transitioned out of pro football in 1996, what was the hardest part about that transition?
The camaraderie, and I'm sure most people say that, being in that locker room, having fun with the guys, having the parties in my basement, and just enjoying the thing that I enjoyed most was, making my mom and dad proud, taking care of them, and of course my five brothers, making my five brothers proud of their brother that he made it. And when you look back over your whole career, you go back with a big smile on my face. But you know what? For me, the good Lord had plans for me, and I didn't realize until after I retired that there's big things ahead of me. It wasn't had anything to do with football.
You went through a very public battle with cancer recently. In 2018, you were given the Jimmy V Award at the ESPYs. Is that the toughest battle that you face in your life?
Physically, for me, without a doubt. But you know what? The mental battle I had, after I retired, as I was telling you, 2 weeks later on Valentine's Day, which is my birthday, my son was born. And Eric, you know, when you have a little boy, as you do, all those dreams you have to enjoy your time with them, raise them, hopefully he'll play football and be like you on the field and all those great things. But unfortunately, the good Lord had plans, and that was my son was diagnosed with a fatal genetic disease, and he passed away at the age of 8 years old. And you know what? It was just set me up for what I'm doing now, and that's hopefully making a difference for others out there, and that, of course, are fighting for their tomorrow. And for me, it's just, you know what? It was tough leaving the game of football because I loved it. I played it ever since I was a little kid. But you know what? I'm doing better things now. I'm making a difference for others, and I accept that. I mean, it's part of my life. I'm very blessed to have two beautiful daughters now, so we'll see what happens.
You absolutely are making an incredible impact everywhere you go. Over the years, you would come by my charity events, the events that I would be doing, and making an enormous impact even coming there. The events you do every year, the stuff that's everything that goes into Hunter's Hope and all that they do for families. I commend you for that, brother, because it'd be easy to rest on your laurels. It'd be easy to play woe is me. Hey, you know, look at all we've been through. But you continually look outward, and it's remarkable. And even through times, you know, I think back a few years ago at your golf tournament, and we had a moment on the golf course. I'll never forget it, and you were in a ton of pain. But just to think that you were out there because of what it would mean for everybody else that you made it that day, and the amount of money that's going to be raised for families in Western New York. just absolutely remarkable, something I'll always look up to. And you mentioned your daughter. So I have a five-year-old little girl. You have a phenomenal relationship with your daughters. I've spoken to both of them. I've spoken to you about your daughters and your daughters about you, and there's a great relationship. What advice do you have for someone who's maybe 15 years behind you in that process?
Raising a girl, good luck. Daddy always turns out to be the bad guy. Mommy always says the right things, and when she doesn't know what to say, but she knows what she wants from it, she goes, go ask your father. They'll come to me, I go, what? You already asked Mommy. She told you to come ask me, right? Because I'm the bad guy. But you know what? You know, just give them as much love as you can and support them in every way possible. And as we all know, all of us go through tough times in our life. It's your attitude that you have and surround yourself with good quality people. And I know, Eric, you'll raise your kids to be gems. And just love them. Love the heck out of them. And make sure you know who their friends are. And I think that's the biggest thing that I learned having girls is it might be the friend's friend. So you got to know who they hang with and make sure they hang out with good quality people.
Excellent advice. I appreciated that. And I've been given a lot of advice through the podcast, through men's groups at church and everything else. And that is spot on and nothing that's been driven home to me. So I'll always remember that. And poor Grace, when she's 13 years old and I tell her she can't hang with somebody, I'll say, hey, you've met Mr. Jim. That's who gave you that advice. And
exactly.
I'm sorry, but that's JK's problem. All right, we're going to go through some recurring questions. And we'll start off with this one. What's your favorite book?
I wrote some of these things down because I wasn't sure. A Look at Life from a Tree Stand. The reason that's one of them. Of course, my favorite book is the Bible. Number two is my wife wrote a book called Without a Word. And the reason I say that is I've read books in the past, but that one pretty much tells our life story, Eric. And as a matter of fact, we're working on a major motion picture about mine and my wife's life, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And that's not the name of it, but it is. It's the good, the bad, and the ugly, and all of the things that we went through in our life and hopefully be able to make a difference. But it's part of the book Without a Word. And the one I told you about, The Life from a Tree Stand by Stephen Chapman, I just know that I'm a hunter. I love being out in the woods, not so much to, you know, to hunt the animals, but to be out there with the trees and everything and how beautiful it is. And that's probably, you know, some of my favorites as I look at it.
Your vulnerability in making your and Jill's story public will impact so many lives. And there's peace in being fully known. And I commend you for that. And you walk around with a peace about you now. You walk around with a smile on your face. You're not hiding anything. And the impact that you're able to make when you are fully known like that, absolutely remarkable. No one would believe you if they went to your hunting lodge and you said you didn't like the hunt. You just enjoyed.
Oh, I like it. Don't get me wrong. But it's not my number one priority. Being out with my buddies, as you know, being out, whether it's fishing or hunting or camping, I love doing that. And then if a big whitetail happens to come by, okay, sure, it's going to be nice on my wall, or that red stag from New Zealand, or, you know, the elk from Montana. So, yeah, those are like fun. So I won't go too far into it.
Quickly, what's the best hunting trip you've ever been on?
New Zealand. I went with a couple buddies, and we wind up taking my nephew, Zach, who is – I was born 11 days before Hunter was. So I automatically thought about all the trips we're going to take together, me, my son, and my nephew. And he's turned out to be the stand-in for my son Hunter since he is in heaven looking down. So I was able to take him to New Zealand and hunt red stag. And that was a blast.
Yeah, that's one I got to put on my list for sure.
Oh, yeah.
You've mentioned your faith and you mentioned your relationship with Christ a number of times. But what role does your faith play in your life?
It's number one. When I talk and people ask me, how did you get through three bouts of cancer and survive? I said, I live by the four F's. My number one thing is my faith. The faith in a good Lord has plans for me that I will make a difference for others. Number two is my family. My wife, my two daughters, my five brothers have never, ever or walked into my room when I was in the hospital. Any of those times, it walked in with a frown on their face. They walked in with an attitude that they're going to make my day better by their presence, by what they said. And it was awesome. Number three is my buddies, guys like you, Bruce and Thurman, and all those guys would come and see me and make a big difference in my life. And finally, and this is one that pretty much floored me, is I've had, when I was in the hospital, when they told me, told my brother that I had less than 10% chance of living in stage 4. I mean, I thought I was going, and so many fans reached out, and whether they were Patriots, Dolphins, Jets, I couldn't believe it. I was like, really? Dolphin fans, Patriot fans are reaching out to me, wishing me well? I'm like, hold on, something's going wrong here. But yeah, it's the four F's I live with, and without a doubt, the number one is my faith and that God has plans.
That's great. What's your favorite restaurant in Buffalo, and what's your favorite wing spot?
Favorite restaurant in Buffalo, probably two of them. Ilio DiPaolo's, as you well know. I mean, it's one of your favorites. And yep. Mulbiter's, Chef Joe Yergi. So those two, without a doubt. My best wing place is the Big Tree. As a matter of fact, Eric, as we talk right now, Danny DeMarco, as you well know, passed away, and I just was at his funeral yesterday. And he owned the Big Tree. He took care of every Buffalo Bill ever walked into the Big Tree, and God bless him. And we all know where he's going, so it's sad. But you know, I'd have to say best wings I ever had was the Big Tree. Even though there's some guy places like Duff's and the Bar Bill, but I'd have to say the Big Tree.
Yeah, and with the Big Tree comes the atmosphere and the memories and all that goes into the meal, and it makes it a truly special place. And there could be a documentary or something made of the Big Tree and all the stories there. I love looking on the walls there at all the pictures, and you see Peyton Manning stand there, and you say, why is Peyton Manning standing in the Big Tree? Oh, because when he played in Buffalo, he wanted to spend the night so he could go hang at the Big Tree, which is right next to the stadium after the game, and all the legends that are on the walls. And
But they're not there anymore. They took all those pictures down because Danny sold it. But the thing is, they left some of it there for the memories. And if they ever did a documentary on the Big Tree, they'd have to probably leave out a lot of the stuff that we did when we were there. So we won't go there anymore. Next question, Eric.
Well, I do have Eric's quarter. So one of the jerseys up there now with the new ownership is my jersey up where I used to like to sit after games, after a road trip, go in there with and hang out in the corner and watch a ball game on a Sunday night. And yeah, you're right. I played during the cell phone age. So anything we did was on the cell phone anyways. Prior to that, we won't have to document that. But what's your favorite place to travel to?
Probably Italy. I went there on my honeymoon with my wife, and then when we celebrated our 20th anniversary, we said, okay, where do we go? And my wife said, we're heading back. I said, great. And I was all tight shit, and the two kids are going with us. I go, what? But it was the best thing that ever happened. We brought our two daughters with us, and the four of us, that by far was the greatest. I mean, going to Bellagio and so many different places, I loved it, and we'll probably definitely go back a few more times.
What was your first car?
A 1964 Volkswagen Beetle. I brought it home one time. I went to the University of Miami. That's when I got it. My junior year in college, I did a 1964 Volkswagen Beetle. There were hills where I had to get a good run if you're driving from, Miami to Pennsylvania, go up and down a lot of big hills. Well, a lot of times I had to get speed up to like 80 mile an hour to make it up to the next hill. So, but you know what? It's part of life. You live, you learn, and your work ethic, that's just how I was brought up.
For sure. And when you drive a car like that and you have dreams of buying something one day, it propels you. You know, they say desperation. Those that are desperate will often fight for what they want. When you're driving, I would never envision you in a Volkswagen Beetle. But you probably, I started out in a 1991 Honda Accord that I could barely fit in myself. So,
I believe that.
We both upgraded. Who's the most famous person in your phone?
Wow. I'm not sure. I mean, I remember having Burt Reynolds in, but unfortunately he passed away. I mean, I would say Jamie Farr, Klinger from MASH.
Nice.
That's probably my number one. He's a very, very good friend of mine. He emails me all the time, but I got a lot of like country singers, like, Garth Brooks. I have Tim McGraw, a bunch of those guys. And as I think about all the others, you remember Ric Flair? Woo!
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he always just texts me, sending me well wishes and seeing how I'm doing. So, yeah, there's a lot of different ones that I had, but I'd have to say Jamie Farr. And I can't forget it, or I would get yelled at. Shooter. Chris McDonald, Shooter McGavin from Happy Gilmore is one of my best friends. I know you know him, Eric, because he comes to my golf tournament every year. So I have a few good ones on my list.
If you ever have the opportunity for all the listeners out there to go to the Jim Kelly Golf Tournament Gala, you need to, especially if you are a fan of the 90s. It's Hall of Fame quarterbacks, 90s actors, country music singers, and pro wrestlers. It's the greatest mix of people all having a blast. And then you add that with 1,000 Western New Yorkers dressed in Bills gear. And it's a gala, and I say that in quotes. It's not a sit-down dinner. It's a ton of fun and raises an absolute ton for the kids in Western New York. And then last one, what's your favorite movie?
Oh boy, I love watching movies. Probably Gladiator might be one of the top ones. The Patriot, remember The Patriot?
Yep.
Mel Gibson, and there's a lot. I mean, if I think about, Top Gun, I love that. Trading Places, Coming to America is pretty cool. I love the older movies. There's some good ones now, like. My family was watching Schitt's Creek.
Yeah.
My girls and my wife loved it. I mean, I thought it was all right, but boy, there's some people out there that watch every episode, every part of it. They never miss it. But if I had to pick one out of all of them, probably I'd say Gladiator.
Yep. And Gladiator fits with the Kelly Tough narrative as well. And on the Schitt's Creek, me and my wife made it through a season together, and I let her go on, and I stopped at a season.
Yep, I did it.
Yep. Jim, I can't thank you enough for your time. I can't thank you enough for the impact that you've had on my life in my 12 or 13 years knowing your brother. Can't wait to do a lot more life with you, hunting trips and all kinds of stuff, brother. I cannot thank you enough for your time.
Well, thank you very much for having me. God bless you, Eric. You've always been one of my favorites. Centers are always quarterback's favorite guy. So you take care of yourself. God bless you. I look forward to seeing you soon.
Yep, likewise.
BrainMD is Dr. Amen's supplement line, who is a former podcast guest of mine. Dr. Amen is regarded as one of the top, if not the top, brain experts in the entire world, and I've been taking his supplements for a little over a year now and have never felt better. I wish I had these while I was playing. I recommend the Eric Wood Bundle to all current and former contact sport athletes at any level, as well as anyone out there looking to support their brain and increase brain function. The supplements I take daily are Brain and Body Power Max, Neuro-C, Vitamin D3, and Brain Curcumins. For more info on each of these supplements, check out my post on Instagram and I explain them all. My handle is ewood70. Go to BrainMD.com and use code ERICWOOD, one word, to get 5% off your order. Thank you for listening to What's Next with Eric Wood. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please rate it 5 stars and subscribe. That goes a long way for us with this podcast. Tune in a couple weeks for another new episode.